This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us wherever you are in Southern California. We're at the Los Angeles Central Library in downtown Los Angeles at the Mark Taper Auditorium for a program that is sponsored by the Commonwealth Club of California that KPCC was invited to take part in, and we're delighted to be coming your way to talk about campaign finance reform and whether the clean money model that's currently being used in Arizona and Maine might be an effective model for us here in the Golden State. In 2004, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger raised $26.5 million, twice the amount raised by former Governor Gray Davis in his first year of office. Many of California's 55 congressional races cost much more than $1 million, and much of the funding comes from special interest groups. On the other hand, many people argue that political contributions constitute an important form of free speech. We'll be hearing both sides of that question, as well as looking in greater detail at the clean money model during Air Talk, this portion of conversation coming your way. Well, joining us is Susan Lerner, Executive Director of the California Clean Money Campaign. Susan, thank you for joining us.
Larry, thanks for having me.
Give us some of the particulars on how the clean money model works, particularly in Arizona. What kinds of limits there are on fundraising, and how elected officials and those challenging them can choose to opt in or not.
Well, you've hit on, I think, the first important thing about the clean money system, and that is that it is a voluntary system of public financing. No candidate is forced to accept public money. A candidate has to opt to be fully publicly financed and also has to qualify by showing a broad base of support, by gathering $5 contributions from people within that candidate's district, up to a set amount, number of contributions based on the office. And after qualifying as a clean money candidate, and in Arizona they call it the clean election system, that's the last money that that candidate has to raise. After that, the candidate receives public funding, a base amount of public funding to allow them to run their campaign, get the word out to the voters, produce literature, buy advertising, do everything that a campaign would do, except spend 6 to 8 hours a day on the telephone asking private donors for contributions that range anywhere from $10 to, here in California, $20,000.
And the office that is being contested would be attached to a particular ceiling figure of what that public funding would be. So the governor's race would be obviously a much higher number than a state legislative race.
Right. And I have to be honest with you, I don't have the Arizona limits committed to memory, but here in California we have a proposal that was introduced in the state legislature last year and is reintroduced this year by Assemblywoman Lonnie Hancock, the Clean Money Fair Elections Law, and I'm much more familiar with the amount of money that we would provide for a candidate for assembly, for instance, and what the figures are there. After you qualify and you get your baseline amount, if all of the candidates in that particular race have elected and qualified as clean money candidates, the clean money baseline amount is the cap. But, as we know, it's a voluntary system, and there will be opponents for the clean money candidates who opt not to take public financing. In that situation, the system provides matching funds. They do this in Arizona, and it's part of our proposal here, so that if a clean money candidate is facing an opponent who spends more than the baseline amount, there is a dollar-for-dollar match, and under our current proposal, it is capped at 5 times the baseline, so that it is responsive and it is practical.
But it's still not without some risk for a candidate, because in California, given the fundraising power of some of those in office, they could very easily outstrip that 5 times the baseline amount.
Definitely, and that's why, you know, a candidate makes a determination based on the competitive situation of their race as to whether they feel that they want to be publicly financed, or whether they feel that having accepted clean money financing is a strong enough statement to the voter that in some instances it will overcome.
Now,
the
here
fact
in
that a privately funded or a well-funded candidate is running outside of the clean money system.
Here in California, as you know, we've got this enormous state budget crisis. crisis. There are no extra tax dollars to allocate out of the budget to do this. What would you see, or other advocates of this clean money campaign, as the way of raising the money for the state to be able to publicly fund these campaigns?
Well, we happen to favor having a designated funding source and not looking towards the general fund for clean money funding. And we are looking at a number of different funding mechanisms. The one that they use in Arizona is have a surcharge on civil and criminal penalties, an additional 10%, which is paid for things like parking tickets or speeding tickets that go into the clean money fund. There also is a tax checkoff option that they use in Arizona. And also, individuals can donate to the clean money fund directly, and they receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit up to a maximum of $500 donated to the clean money fund. Here in California, we're looking at other means of funding in addition to the designated sources they use in Arizona. And one of the things which has been discussed for a number of years is the possibility of an oil severance fee, which would fund which would provide sufficient income far in excess of what we would need for clean money funding for elections and be a positive gain for the general fund.
Now, Assemblywoman Hancock's legislation, I know, came out of the elections committee in the legislature, but didn't make it out of the legislative session. Do you anticipate there's any change or anything that would make it more likely to be passed in the current legislative session?
Well, I think there is a genuine desire in Sacramento to try and solve the problems, and a recognition that what we need is not just reformation in the sense of moving the boxes about or blowing the boxes up, but coming up with truly innovative systems which would help break through the log jams that we are seeing. And looking at how the Arizona model has worked, particularly with their most recent budget, we're hopeful that the legislators will see that this will give them an independence that will allow them to do some of the make some of the difficult choices that need to be made in order to solve the budget problems that California has.
We're talking with Susan Lerner, Executive Director of the California Clean Money Campaign. Campaign Finance Reform for the Golden State is our topic of conversation in this hour of Air Talk. And we're coming your way from the Taper Auditorium of the Los Angeles Central Library. Mark Spitzer, former Republican State Senator from Arizona and currently the state's Corporation Commissioner, he had an opportunity to run under the clean model, or clean elections model, as it's called in Arizona. Thank you very much, Mr. Spitzer, for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, tell us what you think about your experience of it. Was it positive?
Well, first, I appreciate your hospitality, and I am not so presumptuous as to prescribe what California ought to do. The California legislature and their voters are perfectly capable of doing that. What I can do is provide some perspective. Albeit a red Republican from a red state in California, and the experiences of someone who has run four times for elective office under the old system and once under the clean election system. The statistics show all statewide officers, save one position, have been elected, both Republican and Democrat, under clean elections. A majority of the legislature, we've had more competitive races. We've had some wonderful upsets where Republicans defeated entrenched Democrats and vice versa.
I was going to say that was wonderful for your part.
Well, it was the resulting sessions have shown much more aggressively contested races by both parties in the other party's backyard, which is good for democracy and good for government. High voter turnout, increased public approval of the elected officials based upon a feeling that the elected officials are working on their behalf, not on behalf of interest groups. Now, I will also say that I like interest groups in the Madisonian sense, but the quest for fundraising, the quest for raising money from lobbyists has gotten so out of hand at the state and federal level that Madison would rotate in his grave if he knew how things would work. And if I may make three comments that show how I converted, because I initially was in opposition to this idea. When I was majority leader of the Republicans in the Senate, my job was to go out and raise money for the Republican Party and for the Republican caucus, and I did that. And I'm not bashful. I raised money under the old system pretty darn well. I'm not a shrinking violet. And I would go out to the lobbyists and do my job for the team. I had an epiphany, though, during my tenure in the Senate when I was trying a case. I'm a lawyer by training. And the lobbyists were gathering at the place where I was having dinner, preparing for trial near the airport. And they all had to come by my table to visit one of the members of the House who was not well regarded at all. And I noticed the same lobbyists that were showing up at his event were the same lobbyists that showed up at my event, and then the same lobbyists that showed up at all the other events. The motive of the donor is very important, and it distinguishes clean election system from the lobbyist finance system. The donors under clean elections believe in the candidate. They believe in Mark Spitzer. The donors under the traditional system, the lobbyist system, are indifferent as to party. They're indifferent as to philosophy. They're indifferent as to personal integrity. To them, it's pay to play. It's simply a cost of doing business. Then I decided to run under clean elections for a statewide office in Arizona, Corporation Commission, which regulates the utilities similar to your PUC.
And this despite all the connections you had for raising money.
I had a lot of money in the bank, but I decided this was the right thing to do. And although I still had a little bit of a question in my mind when I came up to visit the Apache County Republican Committee, and the chair of that committee is up in Springerville, Arizona. It was a cold March day. There was snow on the ground. She introduced me. She said, "I've known Mark Spitzer for 20 years. He's a fabulous candidate. This is a tough office for Republicans to win. We need to get behind Mark Spitzer and support him. And we need to support him as a clean elections candidate." And this was a very conservative woman, very conservative ranching community. And I was surprised. But she cleared it up when she said, "You know, we're 5 hours from the state capital in Phoenix. We're closer to Albuquerque than we are to Phoenix. Normally, to participate meaningfully in raising money for a statewide race, you've got to bring a $1,000 check down to a fancy party at the Phoenix Country Club. We're ranching people up here in Apache County. We can't afford to do that. We don't have the time to do that. Clean elections makes the chair of the Republican Committee in Apache County the equal of anybody in the state of Arizona."
And you were clearly sold.
And she sold me.
We're going to continue our conversation from the Los Angeles Central Library's Taper Auditorium as we talk about campaign finance reform in California. Is it necessary? Would it be beneficial to voters? And what about the clean money model? Back after this. This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Campaign finance reform for California. What's happened in other states as well? Our topic in this hour of Air Talk coming your way from the Los Angeles Central Library, a program that has been put together by the Commonwealth Club of California, and we're delighted to partner with them in this endeavor. We've heard from two proponents of the clean money model that's being discussed as a way of reforming fundraising in California. We also have a couple of skeptics, beginning with Duff Sundheim, the chairman of the California Republican Party. Duff, thank you for being with us.
Well, Larry, thank you. And I think the work of the Commonwealth Club on this issue is very important. I want to applaud them and their effort in this regard. And I also want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to appear on radio. Larry, most of my friends tell me I have a face made for radio.
Well, you do just fine at the live event, too. Well, what are your concerns about either this particular model or any kind of publicly funded campaign?
Well, my honors thesis at Stanford was on campaign finance reform, so it's something that's very important to me. But what happened when I was doing my thesis way back in 1975 is that the Supreme Court unfortunately weighed in and said that people have the right to contribute their funds. Political speech is a guaranteed right under the Constitution. I think Mark's experience is one that we need to look at very closely, and I'd be glad to study it with him and others. But I think one of the interesting things is that this is a concept that it seems to be working very well in two very small states. The entire state of Arizona is approximately one-half the size of Los Angeles County in terms of population. I can say that as I listen to these two presentations, there would be nothing that would change in California if we were to institute this policy. Nothing would change. We had approximately 175 races here in the state of California in terms of Congress and in terms of the state legislature. In all of those races, the individual donations only were a factor in one race. And so what happened in this state is because of Proposition 34 is that the money, the ceilings that we put on the individual contributions to candidates was so low that we took all the money out of the individual donors and threw it all into the state party. So both on the Democrat side and the Republican side, the candidates don't spend their time raising money for their campaigns. They spend their time raising money for the state party because the state party is not subject to any campaign limitations.
So it launders the contribution, so to speak.
And it creates walls between the candidates and the funds that are created. In other words, you don't see that money going into that candidate's campaign, so you can't say, okay, well, this union or this interest group is paying funds to that individual candidate. It gets laundered either through something like the state party or independent expenditures. So under this system, there would be nothing that would change in terms of independent expenditures or in money that goes to the state parties, and therefore you're not going to be changing how candidates spend their time. They still are going to be raising money, going to those independent expenditure groups, going to people that are raising money for the state parties. But I don't want to close the door on this. I mean, I really believe in campaign finance reform, but when I had my discussion with Bill Bradley on this, he said, you know, Duff, if we're going to be successful, we have to, it's like mice, keeping mice out of the room. You have to shut out all the holes, because if you have one hole, the mice will get in. Well, my concern is with the Supreme Court decision, they tore down a wall. And so I can't see how, you know, this is going to do anything more than just give more money into the system. Look at what happened at the federal level. We spent close to $100 million in federal funds at the federal level. How much did we spend on the presidential race? Over $1 billion. You can't keep the money out of those that want to spend the money.
Adrian Moore, Executive Director of the Reason Public Policy Institute, joining us. Reason is devoted to free market solutions to a variety of social questions. Thank you for joining us. Your take on the public being involved in election funding. I'm sure you're a big fan of this.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, unlike Duff, I actually would like to shut the door on this. I think the one thing is a clarification of terms, because you know, clean money campaign is a great marketing slogan, but it doesn't really describe what it is. What it is government campaign financing. We're talking about the government funding campaigns, which is not obvious on the surface of the proposal. And I have quite a list of problems I have with that, but I'll confine myself to a couple of them. First of all, the idea of essentially forcing people to fund campaigns of people who they don't support is pretty abhorrent. I mean, should African Americans in Louisiana be forced to contribute funds through their taxes to the candidacy of David Duke if he runs as a clean money candidate? I don't think that's the system we want or ought to have. Thomas Jefferson put it, he addressed this issue way back at the beginning. He said, to compel a man to furnish contribution of money to the propagation of opinions to which he does not agree is sinful and tyrannical.
But is it really that explicit a contribution? If you are contributing to a pool of funds, and that pool is being distributed to a variety of different candidates, is it as direct as you're saying it is, that someone is individually funding someone whose views they find abhorrent?
Well, if you're voluntarily contributing under one of the options, then certainly you're accepting that that money will go to whichever candidates run under volunteer to participate in the program. But to the extent that they're just using revenue from special taxes or what have you, it's money that's coming from people who don't necessarily want to give money to that campaign. And that's sort of my second point on this, too, is the way most people choose to participate in political funding, the way they speak politically on this issue, is by not giving. The vast majority of people don't give to political campaigns because they don't want to. They're not motivated by that. That's not what they want their money to go to. They don't think any politicians are all that good, and they just don't give money to these things. And this is a system for saying, well, tough, you have to participate, and we're all going to contribute as the government to everyone's campaign who volunteers to participate in this program.
But if the majority of Californians say that they want this, as the majority of Arizonans did in passing their initiative that put this into law there, is that really forcing people to do it? Is it not saying that it's a societal benefit to the majority of Californians, like we say about many? I mean, their tax dollars, I think almost all of us would say, are going to things we don't support. We just can't agree on the things that we don't necessarily support.
Right. There is assertion of that, and it's an assertion that there's a public good from this process that necessarily must be funded by the government. I think there's disagreement about what the government should and shouldn't fund. But it's pretty clear that campaigns is not one of those things. Campaigns is a private effort to get into government, to become an elected officer. It's not a government undertaking.
Susan Lerner, your response to some of the points both Duff and Adrian have raised.
Well, let me first address some of the points that Adrian has raised, and then I'd like to respond to some of Duff's comments. It's very clear that indeed the libertarian position does start with the idea that there is this entity, the government, which is separate from the people. But in my reading of our founding documents, the government is the people. And that is the system that we are trying to reassert by publicly funding elections. There is a continuum. The idea that there is some incredible chasm between campaigns and the resulting election and then public service, I think, is a very, very artificial one. It's a continuum, and it has to be treated as a continuum. Historically, we have decided that there is tremendous benefit from public control of our election process. I was certainly very surprised and fascinated to learn from Bob Stern at the Center of Governmental Studies when he testified in front of the Elections Commission, the Elections Committee of the Assembly last year, that up until the 1890s here in California, the political parties printed the ballots. And we obviously, as a society, made a determination that that was not the way we wanted to conduct our elections. So this barrier between campaigns, which are something private, and elections and public service, I'm afraid I just don't buy, and I don't think the public does either, given the increased attention and concern that the public has been expressing about how our elections and our campaigns are conducted.
Okay, and you wanted to respond to a point Duff made as well.
I did indeed, and that is that I think there would be a difference here. First of all, the parties would not be contributing directly to campaigns. That is something which we set up standards in the clean money proposals for, so that the amount of money which can be directly contributed to the candidate is limited. And also the candidates' activities are limited. The matching funds make a tremendous difference. And here, I think Duff is right. The questions of scale between Arizona and California are ones that we in the Clean Money Campaign have been grappling with. And that's why we have proposed in our current proposal a system where there is a dollar-for-dollar match up to a 5x cap. The independent expenditure will increase the amount of money which the clean money candidate has. It is competitive, and it is designed to ensure that there would be a really vigorous debate, that the clean money candidate would not be drowned out, and that the independent expenditure would not be the only way in which people get their information.
We'll hear Duff's response to that in a moment, but let me just reintroduce what we're talking about. Campaign finance reform in California. Is there a sentiment to do it here? What kind of benefits might come from it? What would be the trade-offs involved? And is the clean money model that's being used in Arizona and Maine the best way to go about it? Legislation was carried in the Assembly last year by Lonnie Hancock, Assemblywoman, came out of the Elections Committee but was not passed by the full legislature. Joining us to talk about the issues, Adrian Moore, from whom you've heard a couple minutes ago, Executive Director of the Reason Public Policy Institute, Mark Spitzer, who's former Republican State Senator from Arizona, Duff Sundheim, who is chairman of the California Republican Party, and Susan Lerner, from whom you just heard just a moment ago, executive director of the California Clean Money Campaign. We're coming your way from the Los Angeles Central Library's Taper Auditorium. Duff Sondheim, your response to whether this money from the parties would still be able to come to candidates under the clean money model.
Doesn't need to go directly to candidates. You can do things independently. It doesn't have to go in that category. And again, I just go back to the federal experience. McCain-Feingold was designed to reduce the amount of money that was involved in presidential election. What happened? It went up by an order of magnitude. It went to over $1 billion. So that I understand the reasoning behind this. It's good intent. But I can tell you there's nothing that either one of these articulate speakers have said which I think would reduce the amount of money that's being spent on campaigns in California by one penny.
Mark Spitzer.
Well, I will be happy to provide Duff with that evidence, and it was in my race, in fact. And Duff, you're correct. But the Buckley versus Valeo decision legalized independent expenditures at the Supreme Court. That same Supreme Court upheld Arizona's clean elections laws, incidentally, as not violative of free speech rights because it is an optional system. Candidates can still run under the traditional system. As Susan explained, there is a system of matching funds and a benefit to my clean election candidacy against my Democrat opponent in 2000 was I put a leash on the unions. If they did hit pieces against me in the weeks before the election, I would have received matching funds from the state. There are some folks in Arizona who would not have liked the hit pieces, and it would have been suicidal. So my campaign cost one quarter of what previous campaigns for that same office had cost. And to respond to Adrian, the people in Arizona and Maine, although we are small states, love clean elections. There is a bipartisan consensus that has emerged in support of this system. Candidates from both parties and all philosophies have been successful, and there's been a wider articulation of views. And the negative campaigning and the hit pieces have been reduced because of the matching fund provisions in the law. In Arizona, there's about 100 lobbyists that raise the money that finance the campaigns for the state legislature. That's offensive when I represent 5 million people in the state of Arizona and their voices have been shut out. In my campaign, I had to gather the $5 qualifying contributions to qualify for clean elections funding. 2,400 of those contributions were from new first-time contributors who had never before contributed a campaign because they hadn't been asked. And again, the system was changed instead of pay-for-play. Let me tell you, after I was sworn in, we had a little episode in California you may have heard about called the energy crisis. It affected Arizona. We didn't have the rolling blackouts because our statutes and commission rulings were different than those in California. I was able to go to every Rotary Club, every Quants Club, every civic and philanthropic organization in Arizona and say, I did not raise one dime from Enron. And Enron had been throwing a lot of money around at all parties on this electricity debate, including California. I was able to articulate my view of how the commission should be run based on my principles, and I was able after the election to say to the voters of Arizona, this office doesn't belong to the lobbyists and the money raisers. This office belongs to you.
I want to change gears just a little bit to talk about the enormous size of the media markets in California and how that plays into it. In Arizona, I believe you've got something like 3 television markets, maybe 4 in the state, not all that many. Here we've got many, many television markets. And markets obviously like Los Angeles and Orange counties, like the San Francisco Bay Area, are extremely expensive to purchase time, particularly for statewide candidates. Susan Lerner, how would that play out, given simply the costs of covering such an enormous state? I mean, Arizona being much smaller both geographically and in population.
Well, it does mean that the clean money system here is going to be funding election campaigns at a much higher level. But we are a much larger state, so that when you look at the amount of money that would be needed to run a reasonable campaign, because it's a voluntary system. If you don't put enough money into the clean money fund to actually be able to get your word out to the voters, nobody's going to take advantage of the benefits. But we have capped the amount of money which goes into the fund at approximately a penny a day for each California voter over the age of 18. Now, when you think about the things that we all spend money for, I must admit, being a cappuccino fan and liking a muffin or a bagel on the way into the office, that I spend more on my morning bagel or muffin and cappuccino one day than it would cost me individually to have my contribution to the Clean Money Fund.
But the only problem is it's that penny a day plus all the other pennies a day for other very important state services that are involved. So,
exactly.
I mean, it's not just that alone. But do you think it's possible for candidates to get the word out in a state as large, particularly if you are an underdog challenger, to get the word about who you are to enough voters to win an election with this kind of limit?
Absolutely, because when you quantify all of those penny-a-day contributions, the system is able to fund as much as a maximum amount, assuming all matching funds were to apply for a gubernatorial candidate at a rate of $60 million. Now, you can run a good campaign. That's not the maximum amount of money which has been spent. There's no question. But it's a solid competitive amount.
We'll continue our conversation on campaign finance reform and legislative and local races in California as we discuss the clean money model. Back with more conversation from the LA Central Library right after this. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC, covering Southern California as NPR News covers the world, with studios in Orange County, Los Angeles, and at Pasadena City College. We're coming your way from the Los Angeles Central Library's Taper Auditorium, our conversation about campaign finance reform in California and would the clean money model that was introduced as legislation into the Assembly last year be the best way to go about it. Let me reintroduce our guests. Susan Lerner, Executive Director of the California Clean Money Campaign, a campaign that's attempting to do here in California what's already been done in Arizona and Maine. Duff Sondheim, the chairman of California's Republican Party. Mark Spitzer, former Republican state senator from Arizona and currently the state corporations commissioner there. And Adrian Moore, executive director of the Reason Public Policy Institute. We're going to take some questions from members of our audience here at the library, but I just want to ask real quickly before I do that, because I didn't bring this up earlier and I think it's an important point. Susan Lerner, what happens to third-party candidates? Do they have access to the same level of funding as Democrats and Republicans?
Yes, they do. We had a system where they would have received a lower level of funding in our original proposal that was introduced last year. We've revised that this year so that party candidates from smaller parties, independent candidates, have the ability to qualify based on their performance and attractiveness to the voters for the same amount of funding as Democrats and Republicans.
And that attractiveness is based on how their party did in a previous election?
It is either based on how their party did in a previous election for the district in the office they are running for. So it's assembly race to assembly race, or they can gather a supermajority of qualifying contributions. They show a larger amount
of these $5 contributions.
And that is modeled to some degree on what we have existing in the elections code, where a candidate who wants to run for office but doesn't want to pay the filing fee is able to hand in a larger number of petition signatures.
Okay.
So this kind of mirrors what is already existing in the law in dealing with third-party and independent candidates.
Let's get to some audience questions. Adrian, I think this is best posed to you. If money represents free speech, how can people without it, money I assume, hope to be heard in the legislative process?
Well, this proposal doesn't really address that. They still aren't – people without money still aren't going to be able to support their candidate except through voting through this process.
Well, even poor people have $5, though.
But yes, they have $5, but that's essentially like the vote. That isn't going to put anybody over the top. You can give $5 to a candidate now. If they've got $5, they can give $5 to a candidate now, and that's
But it doesn't qualify them to receive public campaign financing. In this case, those $5 contributions, each one would add up as having influence for that candidate.
The $5 contributions of people of modest means become consequential, which is in distinction to the status quo.
All right. So, Adrian, if not this, is there any way for people of modest means to have influence? well, aside from voting?
Without a system like this, everyone was struck by how different Howard Dean funded his campaign from the typical way of funding campaigns. He got a lot less special interest contributions. He got a lot more individual grassroots contributions. And it's because he built a system that was designed to do that, and he innovated in that system. We're already seeing that. So the answer is, why did we have Emily's List arise back in the late 80s and early 90s? Because it was a way to bring together people who were otherwise disenfranchised and give them a voice in the system. There's lots of mechanisms for doing that, for bundling together these small
political mutual funds, so to speak.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you don't need this. You don't need government financing of the campaigns to get that.
All right. Mark Spitzer, this is for you from our audience. Will you please summarize how your behavior as a public servant changed after you ran for office with the clean election model, and do you believe other politicians would experience the same change?
It's interesting, having been under the old system, human beings are, behave in predictable ways, and I'm by using the term clean elections, we are not saying that people who raise funds under traditional sources are dirty. I think you have good people in the legislature throughout the country operating in a bad system. Barney Frank said, this is the only place in politics where a politician asks for money, gets a check, and it's not supposed to matter. If you have 15 phone messages to return before a floor vote and they're lined up, human nature is the contributors get returned first. In my campaign, it was not just after you're elected, but the campaign. Once I raised the qualifying contributions, I was done fundraising. Instead of hanging out at the country club or on the phone with the rich donors, we put the kid, the dogs, and the wife in the Jeep, and we went all over the state of Arizona, including places where they had not seen a Republican for 40 years. It was the most fun I ever had. I ran against a Democrat who was raising money from the lobbyists and the PACs, and I won by 125,000 votes.
But what about once you're elected? I think this question gets to the issue of when you're in office. Do you, in fact, return your phone messages in the order in which they were received by your office now instead of who the biggest corporations are?
We are freed of these shackles. The answer is yes. But more importantly, we don't have the sword of Damocles, of the big fundraisers, the guy who could, if you say no, could punish you by supporting your opponent after the race. It is an invigorating and relieving.
But that's great. It's good for you guys. I mean, we're very happy that it's good for you. But does it change votes?
It absolutely changes votes for the people.
Okay.
The special interest, in terms of people say, this is expensive. This is too expensive. I hear that around the country. I think it's too expensive not to do it. If you just eliminated some of the most egregious special interest breaks at the federal and state level, in 1 year in Arizona, we had a little scandal. You would pay for clean elections for 30 years in the first year it was implemented. You can't afford not to do it.
Okay, real quickly, Susan, I want to get to another question.
The most recent Arizona budget is an instance where the clean election funding helped change votes once people were in office. Moderate Republicans who were elected running clean were able to break with the Republican Party leadership in the Senate, sorry, Mark, and vote for a more moderate budget. Also in Maine, they were able to pass really forward-looking legislation regarding prescription drugs, and they are closest to a single-payer system. The legislators there said, we could never have voted this sort of health care reform if we had to take our next election contributions from the large drug companies.
Let's take another listener, or I should say audience question. Susan, could you describe the difference between the clean money campaign and the federal McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform? What are the differences in this?
Very, very different. McCain-Feingold is an attempt to restrict the flow of money. It puts limits on, and it tries to differentiate between campaign contributions based on source and where they're going, how they're going to be used. And it generated the famous comment by a Supreme Court justice that money is like water, it will find a way. We recognize that trying to put these caps on are simply creating unintended consequences, and we're actually making it harder for good people to run for office by making them jump through so many campaign disclosure and campaign finance limitations. This is an attempt to open up the process, to equalize, and to encourage more ordinary citizens not to say to themselves, you know, I think I'd be really good in the state legislature, but I can't mortgage my house in order to run. Therefore, I'm just going to have to take a pass, and somebody who has access to a personal fortune or more rich friends will run, not me.
Did you want to respond, Adrian, to that?
Well, I mean, there's an important implication of that, which is a lot of the motivation behind McCain-Feingold is a popular sentiment out there that we need to get the money out of the campaigns, not just shift which money goes where, but there's just too much money in campaigns and it has too much influence. And I think the anecdotal evidence, short-term evidence we have from these two small states doesn't really tell us what's going to happen. If you look at the way money flows in elections in California, you look at the L.A. mayor's race where you're going to have 5, 6, 8 pretty viable candidates in a good year. People give money because they think someone's going to win, because they think they are actually going to spend the money better than another candidate. So just because the other candidates may get the money matched if you increase your contribution to one candidate doesn't mean you're not going to increase the contribution if you think it's going to be used more effectively. So this could lead, I think, will lead in California to a race to the top of spending where public financing, government money, is going to go to match the highest money-raising candidate in every race.
Who opts out of the system, you're saying.
All you have to have is one. If you have one really rich guy or one guy who's got a lot of very rich backing running in a race with six other people who are clean money, they're all going to spend the same amount, and it's going to be the highest amount that's spent.
Mark Spitzer, you have some rich people in Arizona. Has this happened?
It has not, and the way our system works, the rich guy could come in and spend the roof off and blow the caps, and the clean elections candidate would have less. But the historic pattern has been more candidates, more diverse views. There are some Republicans that make me look like the second coming to George McGovern who have been elected to office. There are some very liberal Democrats who have been interesting voices. We've had the Green Party. We've had the Libertarian Party. There are more ideas. There are better races. And, in fact, the evidence is the money although there are certain races that just inspire spending binges, aggregate spending has gone down because the matching funds put a leash on some of the independent expenditures, and then we have broadened their participation. Thousands of Arizonans have made these $5 contributions that never before participated in the political process, and you look these folks in the eye that have never done this before, and they're excited, and you cannot place a price tag or a value on the palpable excitement when people feel the government for the first time belongs to them.
Mark, your passion is palpable for this. You're a great evangelist for this. it's clear. You feel this is revolutionary. Duff Sundheim, your thoughts on this?
Again, I think Mark is very passionate on this. I unfortunately am burdened by the fact that I have the experience of working with this system. And yes, you may be in a situation where an independent expenditure that goes directly in support of a candidate or not to a candidate triggers some sort of stuff. But frankly, now, if you look at what especially we're learning from the unions, I mean, you can spend money in such a way that it's not specifically targeted to somebody. For example, voter registration. In this past election, there were people spending $20-$25 per registration. Now, if you're registering somebody to vote, is that something that goes to help one candidate or another? But what if you do it in a district where the registration is 75% Democrat? Also, I'm a little concerned about the language. I kind of feel like I'm on an animal farm show. I mean, one, in terms of clean money, I mean, what it is taxpayer finance money. And you're saying if it's clean, then you're implying that the other money is dirty. And Susan's one penny a day adds up an election cycle to be $500 million of taxpayer money. So that's not an insubstantial amount.
All right. Just before you weigh in on that, let me re-identify. You're tuned to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We're at the Taper Auditorium of the Los Angeles Central Library in downtown L.A. discussing campaign finance reform in California, looking at what is called the clean election or clean money model in Arizona and Maine. Susan Lerner, a response to this, because Duff, I think, brings up a great point here. That is this gray area. When you've got independent expenditures, where do you draw the line of what's going to be matched for the person who opts in on clean money campaign?
Well, we have some standards in our proposal where it's clear in many instances when an independent expenditure is being made directed to a candidate, advocating a vote for or against a candidate. We also have a provision where we try and deal with sham issue ads, and that is any independent expenditure made within a specific time period right before the election that depicts, references, or names a candidate kicks off a matching fund.
But there are ways you can do it without mentioning a candidate explicitly. We sure see that in California a lot.
Well, you know, there may be some instances where independent expenditures are indeed running away. But I would like to say that the current system is certainly not successful in addressing the problem of independent expenditures. When a candidate is hit with a late campaign hit piece and has to scramble and doesn't raise the money to respond, I think independent expenditures are something which people are discussing. And quite frankly, so far, I haven't heard any other system which tries to grapple directly with the challenge presented by independent expenditures.
I think the fight is worth the fight. I'm just not sure that the proposed solution is a remedy for the ill. The ills that have been expressed here are ones I share. The frustrations that Mark and Susan express and that is so popular with the people is something, like I said, I'm willing to look at. But just the system that we have, I can't get past that Supreme Court decision, and I can't get past my experience.
Duff, we're just about out of time. I'm sorry to cut you off, Mark Spitzer. But I have to ask, Duff, you this closing question. Are Republicans in California going to fight this tooth and nail?
No, I think we're going to look at it. I mean, anything that can improve the system is worth taking a serious look at.
All right. I thank you all very much for being with us. We appreciate your joining us on Air Talk. Adrian Moore, Executive Director of the Reason Public Policy Institute here in Los Angeles, dedicated to free market solutions to societal issues. Mark Spitzer, former Republican State Senator from Arizona, who ran, I believe he said, three times under the old system, four times under the old, one time under the new, and boy, does he like the clean election model that Arizona's adopted. He's currently the state's Corporations Commissioner. Duff Sundheim, Chairman of California's Republican Party, and our thanks as well to Susan Lerner, Executive Director of the California Clean Money Campaign. And they have a website. If you want to look it up, you can see more about their organization and get more details about what they are proposing in legislation that undoubtedly will be introduced again during this current California legislative session. In closing, I just want to offer some thanks. We appreciate the Commonwealth Club of California. This program of Air Talk, produced in collaboration with the Commonwealth Club, which is a nonprofit public affairs forum hosting speeches, debates, and discussions on topics of regional, national, and international interest. And we appreciate the opportunity to work with them as well. Our thanks to Los Angeles Public Library for hosting this forum and Zabre Valentine from the Commonwealth Club for her assistance in putting the program together. This program is supported by Southern California Edison and by a grant from the California Community Foundation, which makes grants to nonprofit organizations serving the communities of Southern California. This is 89.3 KPCC Pasadena, Southern California Public Radio. Have a great day.